From parent-teacher conferences to progress reports, how do schools communicate with parents in their native language and make sure important information is getting home? Virginia Alvino Young explores how Pittsburgh Public Schools is trying to meet the need.
Hi.
Hi, come on in.
Thank you.
Just get everybody to sleep because this is so bad.
Amina Moya lives in a large brick row house in Garfield with her husband and two kids, Owesso and Isha. They go to Arsenal Elementary School. Moya works next door at Arsenal Middle as an educational assistant. She's in classrooms every day, working one-on-one with students and dealing with behavioral issues. There are more than a dozen multilingual counterparts throughout the district who serve as cultural liaisons for families and help with translation.
Based on the requirement for my job title, it said I have to speak some Swahili.
She also speaks the dialects Chizigwa and Maimai and can read and write in Somali.
So all these other dialects or languages are just additional and I'm not being paid for.
She perceives her valuable skill set as a potential drawback in the district, if it means she's going to have to do more work.
And they expect you to translate for these other dialects or languages that you speak, and you might have to go beyond what's required from you.
She likes working with families and being their point of contact, but translating documents, not so much. It's a lot of responsibility, and she worries a parent will miss important information.
And I prefer to not say I can do something 100% when I know the best translation you're going to get is probably 85 to 90.
Moya says she mostly does verbal interpretation now, making phone calls to families and interpreting at meetings. She says those tasks can take a lot of time and go beyond her designated work hours. While she says it's important for the community to have people like her in the schools, she says some things should be left to people who are extensively trained.
I'm sure there's a lot of professional people that can do it, but we want to be cheap.
Jonathan Cavell says Pittsburgh Public Schools is working with its limited resources to address some of Moya's concerns. He's the director of English as a Second Language for the district. He says assistants like Moya aren't asked to work beyond their regular hours, and that they shouldn't, according to their current collective bargaining agreement.
We would ask them if that would happen to let me know so we can make sure that we provide alternate means for translation and interpretation, because we want to make sure that we're honoring their day.
The district has also recently adjusted the classroom assistants' workloads.
So after some feedback and hearing from some of our colleagues, we try to keep the work that they do to meetings, to phone calls, and to minimal documents that don't require a lot of technical translation.
Cavell says the district is moving towards a more formalized approach to translation, especially with the help of Darlene Garcia Saldana. She's the translation and interpretation manager for Pittsburgh Public, a fairly new position.
What we do here is pretty much try to keep up with all the requests we get every day. So.
And she does that without a huge budget.
Not having the resources shouldn't be an excuse. We don't have the resources, let's become creative.
She spends much of her time responding to lots and lots of emails. She started a day with 88.
This is a follow-up. This is a request. Another request. So this is kind of important, so I will prioritize this one. They say, okay, we need this in this language, and we need it back by today. See, right here.
There are different types of requests. Meetings, like parent-teacher conferences, are a big one. Saldana writes out by hand rows and rows of scheduled meetings, the time, location, and language.
For example, Kirundi meeting. Okay, this is not going to happen. This day, let's mark it here. And this is how I know which meeting is happening where.
For these types of things, the district prefers to use the educational assistants. After that, there are some freelancers they can call upon. They also have access to a phone service called TransPerfect that interprets in real time.
People don't like phone call, the phone call service. I mean, it's really our last choice.
Documents are another story. There are lots of them, from one-page progress reports to daunting individualized education plans, or IEPs, for special education students. These can range from 30 to 90 pages. Just a few weeks ago, the district piloted a partnership with an outside company to take over translating every document over 5 pages and 100% of IEPs. Saldana says the turnaround time has seen a dramatic change. Short documents used to take 3 or 4 weeks.
Now it's 3-4 days.
There are several ways translation requests can get to Saldana. First, a parent can ask for services by calling something called the 9 line, where they leave a voicemail which is directed to the proper translator.
Nepali ko lagi. kama unataka kuongea Swahili, dara namba tatu.
Saldana says she usually gets at least one call a day. Most requests come from schools and teachers through an online form. It takes just a few minutes to fill out the language and deadline, but Saldana says one of the biggest challenges is getting teachers to actually use it.
Sometimes they're like, okay, give me the interpreter's phone number, and then I tell them, you need to fill out the form, and I do get lots of pushback on that. But I also explain this is the way how we make resources happen.
Another way the district can communicate broadly is through its growing use of robocalls, which announce things like a 2-hour school delay.
晚上好，这里是匹兹堡公立学校。明天所有匹兹堡公立校区的学校将。مساء الخير，معكم المديرية التعليمية بمدارس بيتسبرغ العامة.
These go out in English and the other top 6 languages spoken in the district. But sometimes all these communications can't make their way to families.
Parents sometimes do get mad at us. And I personally take phone calls, why didn't you tell me? And I ask, what is your phone number? And so, oh, you know, I changed the phone number last month. I was like, yes, that's why we need to update it in the system so you can get the announcements.
Saldana believes that across the board, communication is a shared responsibility.
And I'm telling parents, this is not, you know, only the district. You also need to do your part.
This school year, Saldana has had to coordinate translation for more than 1,000 flyers, dozens of lunch menus, robocalls, parent-teacher meetings, well over 2,000 requests in total. While the need is growing, so is the diversity in the district. For example, there are now Ixchel-speaking families in Pittsburgh, a Mayan dialect from Guatemala, and one that the district can't find translators for.
They don't have anybody. So this is just an example of how challenging it can be.
A few of the families understand some Spanish, so translators simplify their language when they work with this population.
It's impossible to cover everybody. This is work in progress, and it will take years for us to really, you know, nail it down and say, you know what? Now it's perfect.
At the end of the day, both Saldana and Cavell agree. The biggest change has been the third-party company taking over document translation, something they hope to expand. And that the greatest assets in the district are the multilingual classroom assistants who do so much day-to-day.
The educational assistants work literally at 180%. They go so above and beyond, and we're just, I don't know what we would do without them.
Cavell says the district is trying its best to balance the legal requirement of translation services with the financial and human capital costs.
It's an ethical and moral imperative that we provide these services. We just have to really carefully consider how we do it within our resources.
Classroom assistant Amina Moya has seen big changes in the district since she was a student, and Jonathan Cavell was her ESL teacher. Her brothers did most of the translating for her parents, a big no-no these days. And there were only a few multilingual assistants in the schools.
Now it helps a lot of the families feel like they're getting somebody who speaks their language. They can open up, they can share concerns with the teachers.
Moya says she loves her job and serving the community. She urges everyone in the district not to get complacent when it comes to translation services.
There's always room for improvement. And that's where a lot of times people think, like, oh, we have come a long way. If we're here, we'll finish up. It's like they just start laying back a little bit and getting more comfortable. But there's no time for that now.
More of the WESA Education Special is just ahead on 90.5 WESA.
We're looking into how important it is for schools to provide translation services so all families can make informed decisions about their child's education. I'm Virginia Alvino Young.
And I'm Sarah Schneider. As a result of a lawsuit, Pittsburgh Public Schools convened a working group to address the district's policies around communicating with all parents. A draft set of recommendations was presented to the school board in September. They include things like more training for parents and staff, greater community collaborations, and more IT capacity. But district leaders still need to implement them.
To learn more about that process and how well the district is meeting the need for translation, I spoke with Jonathan Cavell, the Director of English as a Second Language for PPS, and Jenna Barron, Executive Director of Arise, a group that advocates for immigrant and refugee youth. Jenna and Jonathan, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jonathan, you were a part of this working group. What's the significance of having an opportunity to have so many different stakeholders at one table giving you direct input on how operations can be improved?
It's fantastic simply because hearing more voices connects us with the community and with our community partners. So they provide a different perspective than perhaps we see. So the more that we can hear from the community and folks like Jenna who work directly with families and with students, they may help us to illuminate our practices a little bit better.
And Jenna, how unique of an opportunity was this? You being a community advocate, how many opportunities are there to really have a formal process by which to have input be collected?
Yeah, it's amazing because we're only going to be able to strengthen the resources for our kids by collaborating, particularly as it relates to their learning. So it's always a wonderful opportunity to be able to partner because we have shared goals.
So these six recommendations, I really want to tease apart just the first one, which is really broad, to foster general communication between schools and families. Jonathan, you're in the trenches every day. How would you characterize how well the district is doing just in general, making sure that important information is getting home to families?
I think we definitely have some areas of strength, but also some areas of opportunity that we're looking at now. I think one of the areas of strength that we've really refined is just a general awareness of the need for translation and interpretation. A recent statistic that I found that is remarkable is that 91% of the district speaks English, but that leaves obviously 9% that doesn't. So we want to make sure that we are promoting the needs of the kids and the families and providing appropriate translation and interpretation services.
You refer to them as areas of opportunity. What are some of those sticking points that you look at and say, we really could be doing a better job here?
It's never finished. The ink is never dry. The book is never closed. So I think just as we continue to grow, how can we get information out in different ways? How can we utilize perhaps social media down the road? How can we utilize text services a little bit more consistently? How can we, again, continue to promote awareness of the needs of the kids?
So you're talking about really not just optimizing your existing systems, but perhaps adding some additional resources. I mean, what are we thinking in terms of how feasible and what kind of timeline we could be looking at in terms of really implementing some new things?
So we're kind of in the year two of our refined translation and interpretation process. So we're looking at what is working well and what isn't. And we have a lot of meetings with various district departments and offices. So we're meeting with transportation, we're meeting with early childhood, we're meeting with certainly schools and school principals, and just having conversations about perhaps how we can, what are critical documents and critical things that need to be translated and interpreted, and how can we use that as a foundational rock and then build our house from there.
Yeah. Jenna, the families that you work with, what are some of the barriers that you're seeing for them staying informed and then going in even further and really engaging with their children's schools?
Thinking about the experiences parents and youth I have worked with have had, I actually think that the barrier is not as much on language as it is on navigating what the education looks like systemically and culturally. So when I think about what I've noticed in terms of parents and families being able to navigate the system, the thing that pops to my head is like, what is the difference between their neighborhood school and their ESL hub and the magnet options? How do all of these schools and systems interact within the education system? And navigating like what is the best option for my children? I find that as an ally to families, communicating the difference between different options within the district, different reputations that they may have heard schools having. I mean, there are more cultural aspects of the district as opposed to just like strictly barriers because of language access. I find that that's actually where most of the conversations are.
Well, that's really interesting because that's not explicitly a language access barrier, but maybe a challenge that's going to be compounded if there is a language barrier.
Yes, 100%. Like, I'm sure, Jonathan, you have a lot to say about this.
Sure. And really, to Jenna's point, one of the things that we really promote is equal access. When there are opportunities for kids and for families, how are we sharing them in the most appropriate way? So is it through a document? Is it through a quick automated call? Is it through the website? So it's providing the right supports to the right stakeholders, to the right community. So translating a 40-page document may not be the most appropriate way to get critical information across, but in some cases it could be.
I mean, that to me brings up so many just operational questions, like if this is going to need to happen on a much more individualized basis, and there are so many students across so many different schools, how contingent is this going to be, the success of communication going to be on just personal relationships?
I think it would be a shared responsibility. Sure. So we all have the same goal of getting critical information into the hands of families. So I think all of us play a role to some degree in how we're getting that information across, because, you know, whether you're talking about a university, whether you're talking about a hospital or a court or a school district, they're big systems. And sometimes just being able to provide an access point is the first step to getting questions and concerns answered.
Jenna, why does it matter who is doing the translating?
Interpreters are often not only language interpreters, they're also cultural interpreters. Being able to understand why a young person or a parent may be responding in a way that they are, or understanding that there is information that might be, like, the concepts are totally new to them. I mean, that's all valuable context to have. My opinion is that it adds so much value when you have an interpreter who does have a shared background with folks, because they're just meeting each other where they're at. They understand each other's context.
So, Jonathan, in the district, you have classroom assistants who speak languages, you have a phone line service, and now you're working with an outside third-party company. Mm-hmm. In terms of growing your capacity for translators, which one of these areas, you know, if not all, would you like to see grow?
So I think it's all of the above. Okay. I think it's strengthening what we have. So making sure that there is cultural competency with translation and interpretation. And it's also like a philosophy and a thought about interpretation is that, are we directly conveying information without bias, without coaching or steering the family?
Jenna, is there anything that you feel like has been left out of the working group's recommendations, or something that maybe is not on the radar of the district, or something that needs to be prioritized going forward?
I'm thinking about training and kind of a district-wide commitment to creating really celebratory, empowering, warm spaces for immigrant and refugee youth. Because what I worry most about is the social experience that young people have integrating into the public school system. For obvious reasons, particularly for kids who have had limited formal education before coming to the U.S., like, that environment is just so intimidating. I've witnessed firsthand really negative interactions between my immigrant students and non-immigrant students. That is not surprising, right? Because teenagers are teenagers and bullying is a reality. I just want to see, and I'm not placing blame on the district for that behavior, and I think there are many opportunities to create cultures within our spaces to ensure that we are limiting those things from happening, and we are having kind of shared language about the way that we celebrate diversity and folks who are immigrants and refugees. So I think that needs to be kind of a commitment in terms of leadership. I know Jonathan agrees with me on that, in terms of having a shared message about the way that we create a welcoming school, make a school feel more welcome for its immigrant refugee students. And I also think that part of a larger kind of equity issue is, you know, how do we make all of our schools, not just our ESL hubs, places where everybody feels like they belong, right? And so I think a huge part of that is training for educators to understand the way that we talk about race, the way that we celebrate difference, the way that we celebrate a diverse group of students and staff, so that there's just kind of a shared approach to making our schools places where kids are celebrated for who they are and they feel warm and welcomed and not socially isolated.
Jonathan, you've been with the district for some time. What kind of changes have you seen in regard to creating a welcoming environment?
Conversations about race occur frequently in the district. Mm-hmm. We all go through training about common language around race that we as educators use and the kids use. And I know that as we're growing in diversity, in terms of language and culture, that all voices need to continue to be included, and that, you know, as we're continuing to see more students with limited formal education, as we're continuing to see students that perhaps Pittsburgh hasn't seen before, how are we not only accounting for them, but also celebrating them, celebrating their successes, sharing their culture, sharing their language, sharing their journey in a way that's respectful and in a way that brings everybody together?
Jenna Barron, Executive Director of ARISE, and Jonathan Cavell, Director of ESL for Pittsburgh Public Schools. Thanks again.
Thank you so very much.
The need for translation extends far beyond Pittsburgh Public Schools. Virginia Alvino Young also spoke with Denise Sedlak, the assistant superintendent of Baldwin Whitehall Schools. It's a district that's been serving a diverse population for some time. And Kelly Noyes of the Allegheny Intermediate Unit, which supports school districts and teachers across Allegheny County.
Denise, tell us about the demographics and languages spoken within the Baldwin Whitehall School District and how you've seen that change over time.
Yes, in the Baldwin-Whitehall School District, we have a large percentage of refugee and immigrant families. From a district's standpoint, we have about 12% refugee and immigrants K through 12. But when we look at our kindergarten, first and second grade, we're seeing a shift to almost 24% Asian students that are typically from Nepal or Burma. We have students from 36 different countries speaking over 54 different languages and dialects.
Kelly, you deal with districts all over the county. Is that change and that increase something that we're seeing across the board as well?
Yes, we're definitely seeing it across the county. We've seen a growth in the numbers of students and the diversity. We have at least 67 languages represented.
Where are these pockets of growth? Are they happening in very small communities as well? And what are some of those major trends that you're seeing?
The western suburbs have seen some unexpected growth. So areas like Moon, West Allegheny, the Cornell area, Carnegie, they have all seen, you know, quite a boom in this population in the last, I would say, 1 to 2 years.
And how well would you say schools and districts are informed about that federal requirement that they're really obligated to provide translation services?
They're really getting there as far as knowing what it is that they have to do. But that's just the first part. Then they have to know what resources they have available, how to properly utilize them, and how to apply it across a district. Also how to support it financially. And I think they do a pretty good job of making sure that those high-stakes pieces of information are translated or interpreted for parents. But where I think the challenge really lies is in the little things day-to-day.
Resources are definitely a challenge for most districts. Denise, over in Baldwin-Whitehall, can you explain the scope of resources that you have available to make sure that the district is able to communicate with families in their native languages?
So we partner right now with 5 different agencies in addition to using DeafTalk, which will translate. It's a phone system. The interpretation services come out of the general fund.
How does this compare to what some of the other smaller districts or districts with newer populations that are English learning?
So there's similar practices in place. The IU actually hosts a joint purchasing opportunity with a similar service. We happen to go with TransPerfect, and that is a telephone-based interpretation service. We have now 66 school entities. It's absolutely a challenge, and when you think about where we've seen some of the significant growth over the last few years, they are some of our smallest school districts with, in turn, the smallest budget, and the growth was rapid and not necessarily expected. And when you are talking about the cost for these services, going back to an IEP, that can run $3,000 to $5,000 to translate one written IEP. And so the services are extremely expensive. And when some of our smallest districts see this rapid growth, they're not ready for it. And there isn't room in the budget because on top of the translation services, they're also trying to provide the teachers and the ESL services for the students. And there's a lot of cost associated.
What is it going to take to really get districts in this region and across the country to be meeting that federal standard and that expectation?
I have seen in my work with the districts over the last few years a tremendous amount of growth, and I think the biggest challenge is they have to work around the lack of financial support for this need.
And I think it's important that the Allegheny Intermediate Unit really serves as a phenomenal resource for the 42 districts in Allegheny County and bringing everyone together, because oftentimes whoever's running federal programs wears multiple hats, whether they be an assistant superintendent, a curriculum director, a building level administrator. And so by having the regional meetings at the Allegheny Intermediate Unit, we're able to network, we're able to share resources. Kelly and her team really provide direct guidance to make sure that districts aren't finding themselves in legal issues, and the resources that they provide to all of us are par none, you know, some of the best.
Denise, are you hopeful that other districts that are seeing newer changes in their demographics, that they'll follow suit? Translation services was one part of welcoming and inclusivity. Are you seeing interest from your counterparts in other districts?
Yes, absolutely. I know that in neighboring districts, some of my colleagues that I work closely with will reach out and they'll pick up the phone and say, "Hey, Denise, how are you handling this situation? You know, what are you doing?" And translation, so that parents are aware of it. Again, whatever issues there are, you know, people are a phone call away, and we're really beyond these walls and breaking down barriers and reaching out, because the difficult times that public education faces, you know, Governor Wolf has really put a lot of money into education, but we're still not there yet. We're not scratching the surface. There's been some funding changes, but it really hurts districts because the money is not there for K-12 public education. And this is just one small example of how inequitable funding hurts districts when it comes to special populations of students.